Freedom of religion, as enshrined in the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution, is our most precious freedom. It's called the first freedom because on this freedom all others depend. It is not simply freedom of worship, which some autocratic societies permit even as they restrict religious liberty. In such countries, one can worship yet not be free to change religion or to proselytize. Freedom of religion recognizes citizens' capacity to think, to follow their conscience, to choose or to choose not to worship God. This respect for individual dignity is the foundation upon which freedom of speech, assembly, mobility, press, law and justice, and government by consent of the people are built. The Founding Fathers did not reference God or Christianity in the U.S. Constitution. Wisely separating religion from state in the now immortal words, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There are now more than 3,000 religious groups and over 331 million people in our country. Every one of these people enjoy religious liberty. It's an inalienable right.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have David Wimhoff back on the show. Of course, David is a lawyer, a practicing lawyer, and the author of the very important John Courtney Murray, Time, Life, and the American Proposition, How the CIA's Doctrinal Warfare Changed the Catholic Church. I think that might come up in tonight's discussion. Of course, his website is the American Proposition. How are you doing this evening?
Okay, Tim. How about yourself?
Oh, very well. All things considered, I can't complain. I'm still alive and employed, and everyone's healthy to what I understand. So count your blessings.
Yeah, that's a lot of blessings. That's good to hear.
Well, you wrote this piece. Of course, we've had the election. You wrote a piece on the election.
Of course.
And now here we hear the midterms, the red wave that turned into a ripple. I think as of now, the Democrats are going to control the Senate. I know there's a runoff in December and January between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock, but the most Republicans get is 50 seats now, and so the tiebreaker will be the stateswoman. What's her name again? Kamala Harris. Yeah. Our eloquent vice president. But the House, I think, officially now is Republican. I think they got over the majority now, maybe 222 seats. So we have a new speaker, Kevin McCarthy, in the House. That might make politics interesting for the next couple of years. But there was disappointment because people expected a red wave in a reaction to just the maladministration and just how bad the Biden administration, the train wreck it is. But it didn't materialize, despite Republicans, I think, having a 5-point lead in the popular vote nationwide. But maybe how it's apportioned, redistricting helps, so it doesn't always break down that way. But they seem to flip the difference. I mean, officially, Biden got 5% more votes than Donald Trump in 2020, 81 million votes, I think, to 74 million. Donald Trump received the second most votes of any sitting president, and Joe Biden received the most votes of any presidential candidate in that election through the miracle of mail-in balloting and whatever, you know, magic they was able to pull off at the ballots in that very strange election. Similar problems have arisen in this election. Arizona, they had a very monochromatic bureaucratic Katie Hobbs beating a very dynamic Carrie Lake, despite Carrie Lake, I think, enjoying double-digit lead in the polls. Late voting, I think as many as 30%, between 20 and 30% of the machines in Maricopa County, the Republican stronghold in Arizona, machines didn't work, which effectively is voter suppression. So there's might be some litigation that appears that Katie Hobbs, she wasn't elected. She has indeed won the governor's seat in Arizona, or at least been installed through electoral magic. A lot of problems, people looking at these votes, a lot of questions of legitimacy now. My feeling is, if you look at the results, either way, the system is busted, because even if the Democratic Party wasn't rebuked at the polls for its poor performance, the train wreck gets created. That's an indictment of democracy. And of course, if they cheated, it's an indictment of democracy. But it's the system we have, right? Love it or leave it, as they say. So I'll let you take it from there.
Love it or leave it. Yeah, that's right. Leave it and make another system. I think we can.
Okay.
I think what's going on, you're right, Tim. I think the entire system is losing its legitimacy in people's eyes. I think what we saw was political warfare in its finest form this last election. It was political warfare against the American people. Now, the Wall Street Journal does say the country's going a little bit more blue. I don't know about that. But I do know, like in Nevada, we had Laxalt, who was winning. And his lead, again, kept getting bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden, the Democrat wins. Mm-hmm. Just like that. I think the legitimacy of the system is in question. I think that the plutocratic class is willing to destroy the electoral system to keep their power. And how you have to look at this is a giant means of voter suppression.
Yes. Yeah. Especially when you have something like mail-in voting, early voting, late voting, apparently.
Apparently.
By the way, how many you need, and the votes just come in. Again, the mechanics of election matter, and so they've created a system. To me, it's almost as if it's like, you know, accounting. If it's opaque or mysterious, you assume there's fraud. Same thing with voting. If it isn't above board, clear, paper balloting, one day voting, all that sort of stuff, you're not going to get rid of all fraud, but you're going to minimize it. You keep it within the single digits. But now it appears perhaps they can turn an election. Turn a landslide into a slim victory, or at least limit the damage and keep it from a catastrophe for a party, which is by any measure, any standards, is really unpopular. Well, that's what it appears has happened.
I think you're right. I think what you're having is, I'm going to talk blue-red. So I think that, you know, the blue party is winning because they're cheating. Okay. They're cheating, not just at the ballot box, but they're cheating because they got the mainstream media on their side. They've got the entertainment media on their side. They're shaping people's views and perceptions on a day-to-day basis. And I mean, if you got to cheat, if you got to stuff the ballot box, that means you're weak. That means you can't win.
Despite all that propaganda, they still can't pull it off legitimately.
No, they still can't pull it off. That's exactly right. Because there's still a sense of an American people out there. There's still a sense that we have the ultimate say and we believe in the system. That's right. And they can't, and there's people that are still tied to the natural order of things, and they don't want this ideology pushed down on them.
And for better or for worse, those people, mostly white Americans, still down, at least for better or for worse, look for the Republican Party for some sort of representation. I heard an interesting stat. 66% of people who owned a firearm or had a firearm in the house voted for the GOP.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it, Tim.
You know,
I believe it. Tim, the Republican Party has got to realize a very basic truth. It's the party of the white people. And, you know, in America, you have white, you have black, you have Latino, you have Asian, but people still identify in those major areas. Now, you may have subgroups. I get that. Like you have, you know, Irish Americans or, you know, Southern Americans or German Americans. I get that. I understand that. But these are the categories of people that you got. And the reality is that Trump and the Republican Party draws white people, people of European descent. That's what that means, of a common ancestry. That's what that means. And, you know, I go back to what John Jay said in 1787, Federalist Number Two. He said, you know, we are an American people here. We have common ancestors. Whoa, what does that mean? I mean, we're from England and Ireland and Scotland, and there were German and Dutch over there at the time, too. But we had common ancestors. They came from a common continent. We have a common language, a common religion, Christianity. I know there were different sects, different versions of the sects that were out there, and common customs and traditions. And that is kind of what throughout American history has been under attack. And it's been under attack, I submit, from a lot of different sources, from the Republican ideology. When I say Republican, I'm talking about the liberal order ideology. I should say that. From the liberal order ideology that, you know, Thomas Jefferson and other radicals brought, Thomas Paine brought here and implemented. You know, Thomas Jefferson went out there, he left the Continental Congress in the autumn of 1776, and he said, holy cow, Martha, we got a problem here. And, you know, he says, we've got this common law, which talks all about, you know, God and the rights of church, rights of God, rights of the church. We got to write this stuff out. This is too authoritarian. So he started writing what he wrote, and he worked with the other founders. And they came up with what they came up with, especially in the First Amendment. So you had the attack from an ideological point of view. You had an attack from a very individualized, corrupt Christianity with the Second Great Awakening. You had other attacks on the American identity, you know, quite honestly, with the expansion of the franchise with different interest groups in our own time. And now we're seeing CRT. And so I think what you've had is, while there was an engine to keep these groups together, that's all being destroyed. And now the groups are at war with each other.
Yeah, you see a balkanization or sort of a tribalization of American politics, and that's sort of a result of this big push to diversify the country, but in earnest since 1965, you know, with the immigration reforms, Hart-Celler, that act. And of course, at the time, Americans were aware of the problems of demographic changes to the country's ethnicity, because at the time, when Lyndon Johnson signed that law, those who voted for it said that it would not change the country's demographics. So they had to give lip service to that, at least to that concern. Now, I think they're dedicated to changing the demographics, you know, the groups that agitated for it.
I think so.
But you can't, like you said, the common heritage, the culture, this forms the political, you know, identity of the country, its institutions, which was an extension of European civilization. Yes. And so we're seeing the effect of the demographic changes. You know, if you have a country that's 80-85% ethnic white, Caucasian, European, and you have on the margins minorities that can take part in the system and perhaps, you know, be privileges and rights be extended to them, but it has to be on the margin, be a minority, you know, to provide an accent, if you will. And of course, America itself, with this expansion in the 19th century, taking in huge Catholic populations, like in the Southwest.
Did I just lose you?
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Okay, we got cut off here. So I forget where we were.
well, Big Brother didn't like what we were saying. I can tell you that.
Perhaps that's it. I think we're connected. Okay, we're recording. Okay. Yeah. As we were saying, you know, with the media and the First Amendment and these things, again, with that much of an advantage, they still appear as they still have to cheat. So that says something. We were talking, I think, about the Republican Party kind of being an explicitly pro-white party now, because of the politics of the CRT and everything in the past couple of years, and the Republican Party kind of embracing that. I think 73% of people who voted identify as white or are called white, whatever that means, and 58% of them voted for Republicans. 52% of married women voted for Republicans. So there's a lifestyle thing here too. If you're kind of responsible and traditional in the normal sense, you tend to vote right wing. And so that says a lot right there.
Well, I think it does too. I draw fire because I think the term white actually has significance. And let me explain what that means. And I started to say it before Big Brother cut us off. And while we were talking, I think white is a reference to a specific group of people. These are people whose ancestry is European, you know, English, Dutch, German, Italian, Caucasian. And that is an element of ethnicity. Now, I know the term white, because that's race, okay? You're talking about ancestry, race. That's an element of ethnicity, just like language is, just like identity is, just like customs and traditions. Everything that John Jay said in Federalist 2 on October 31st, 1787, that is the textbook definition of an ethnicity. And I think what has happened is that there has been a focus on this idea of race as being preeminent part of the American identity. It's an important part of the American identity. I submit Americans are people of European descent as an ethnic group. We are identifiable. Our customs, our traditions, our values, whatever, were actually pretty succinctly put forward on that one page by the National African American Historical Museum. That got taken down, I believe. Mm-hmm. But it seemed pretty solid about what constitutes white, which is another word for American, in my view. And I know I draw a lot of fire from a lot of people for that, but I think that's how you have to make sense of these different groups. Because if you talk to Black people, they identify as Blacks. Now, Blacks and whites can both be citizens of the United States. So they're both Americans in that sense. So you have to define what you mean by American. Is it nationality? I mean, is it citizenship? Or is it an ethnic identity and a nationality? And I think what you had with America is you had all the Europeans come over here and create this new race of people identified by the founders called Americans with unique issues and problems and challenges and languages and ways of looking at things. And I submit to you, too, that this was observed by others, by the British, and it was observed even by the popes as being a very real dynamic that there's this American people and, you know, their stock is European. I mean, a lot of it is English and Irish and Scottish, but it's also European. And this is kind of what Thomas Paine talked about, too. And so the founders were dealing with this issue of jus sanguinis versus jus soli. And they were saying, okay, so if you get born here, you're an American citizen, but you know what, maybe we should put some limits on that. So you had the Immigration Acts of 1790, 1795, that kind of limited who could be an American if they were white. So you see the use of the word white, okay, which, you know, signifies European. So that is kind of my view on this identity, which is known as American, as an ethnic identity. And I think that has been watered down over the course of 250, it's been under attack over 250 years. You know, this people, as imperfectly formed as they are, this American people has been cut off from God, been cut off from the true faith, cut off from its own roots increasingly, been under attack with materialism. You know, James Truslow Adams was the guy who came up with the American Dream and really marketed that idea in the 20s and 30s. And he was an associate of Colonel House. Mm-hmm. Well, Colonel House with Schiff and Warburg and all those guys and Wilson, you know, kind of planned World War One, Two, Three, Four, and Five. And so what you had, you know, you had this group of guys who were kind of thinking, well, you know, how can we knock down barriers to capitalism? And so it makes perfect sense to me that you would have James Truslow Adams come, you know, develop this idea of the American dream, material success. At the same time, you had others, and his name drawing a blank, I think I mentioned him in my book. You have others who come up with the idea of Judeo-Christian. Because, see, what you had with the time of John Jay is an American was a Christian. Now, maybe, you know, it was a corrupt Christianity, but that's the job of the Catholics to go in and convert. And that's, you know, that's actually in one of the documents from Vatican II. I hope people haven't turned me off yet here. But it's the one about missionary activity. And it says in one of the paragraphs, paragraph 9, it says, missionary activity is nothing else and nothing less than a manifestation of God's plan. Its epiphany and realization in the world and in history clearly brings to the conclusion the history of salvation through preaching the celebration of the sacraments, in which the Holy Eucharist is the center and summit. Missionary activity makes Christ present. He was the author of salvation. It purges of evil associations those elements of truth and grace which are found among peoples, and which are, as it were, a secret presence of God. So clearly, you know, as noted by Cardinal Wright and by the popes, you needed, the American people needed to have the evil purged from the goods that they found. And that was what the conversion of the Americans was so important. Now, that hasn't happened in large measure, and the Catholics have been taken over and pushed down and Americanized, as it were. And so as a result, you don't have this great Catholicization of the fatherland, I submit, of the American fatherland and of the American people. Now, that should also happen with the Blacks and the Asians and the Latinos. Absolutely, it should. But I'm just talking right now about people who are known as white, who I think, you know, also mean American in the U.S. There are no white people in Europe, okay? They're Germans, they're Italians, Estonians, British, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you know, they talk about white here, they mean American, but they use the term white to attack this identity as an American, of our forefathers, you know, of the good of that we brought forth here. They use that to attack us. And one person who's noticed that is Michael Hudson, the economist. And he said, the CIA has gone repeatedly into countries around the world and attacked ethnicity, calling them racist. Oh, you're a racist. You know, you Italians, yeah, you're racist. Hungarians, you're racist. You know, so they've elevated the race just like they have over here in America to attack the American people and not allow this group to coalesce and be purified of the darkness that there may be in this culture and in every other culture. And so now you're getting hit with separate, you know, since 1947, I've spoken about this, 1947, they've removed God from the local level and prayer in the classroom and abortion and contraception and gender identity and gay marriage. And these are all weapons. These are weapons to destroy any sort of ethnic solidarity. So, and it's a weapon when you say, oh, I'm a boomer and you're a Gen Xer or a millennial. You know, those are weapons too, to break us apart. That is what that is. And so we have to understand we are a people, and there are many peoples in America, but we can actually work together and exist together. And the Catholic confessional state offers the way to do that. Okay, I'm done for now.
Well, the liberal order is appears to be collapsing. It can't even maintain a window dressing anymore, right? A good example is the recent attempt to suppress, you know, free speech by the Biden administration, Department of Homeland Security, FBI, working with big tech to purge social media of views or information they find not congenial to their agenda. And this is openly spoken of. DHS now considers criticism of U.S. policy with Russia and the Ukraine, criticism regarding the COVID response and vaccine mandates, discussions, about race. These things are threats to national security.
Right.
You know, this is also based on the liberal order's own the Constitution and the liberal society, its own rules. They're breaking their own rules now.
Well, so, they're in power. I mean, the club has kind of been formed. And so, you know, you have a group that's in power, and it's the old Marine Corps saying from when I was a young man, it was, if you're good enough to get in. Well, I mean, if you got talent and you got merit, that was Michael Sandel's book, you know, The Tyranny of Meritocracy. You know, if you got the ability to really advance the interests of these people, you get in that crowd too.
Yeah.
But not everybody can. That, you know, this is a smart, ruthless crowd that's running the show here. I don't mean to praise them. I'm just saying they are very intelligent. They're very ruthless. And this is how they run the show, and they select people to come out. Survival of the fittest, that didn't come from Darwin. That came from Herbert Spencer. Herbert Spencer was basically writing in the 1800s after the liberal order had taken off. But the liberal order is now gradually collapsing. And I think Catholics are starting to see that. And a lot of people are starting to see that because now all these liberties are starting to go away.
Yeah, they start to go away the moment they're exercised and challenged the ruling elite or the narrative, the oligarchic control. And technology kind of played a part in this.
Absolutely.
With communication, the internet, and all of a sudden, for a few years, you had this freewheeling speech on the internet, which was shattering their various narratives that they need to maintain control of the populace. And they just more or less just put the hammer down. They privatized everything, right? So it's not a violation of the First Amendment. Well, apparently that piece on The Intercept regarding the role of various alphabet soup agencies in the Biden administration in coordinating the suppression of free speech on the internet, which is a crime and a violation of the First Amendment. And this is something perhaps that if the House of Representatives, Republicans, if indeed they want to represent the interest of traditional heritage America, they should have hearings on these things, regardless of what happens in the Senate, and expose this to this as well, just the same as well as various state legislatures that are Republican controlled, and there are many. They should start having hearings and start impeaching some of these agents of chaos that the Soros DAs, and these things start acting like sovereigns. Should have taken a page out of Governor DeSantis' a book, and start acting like sovereigns and defending their states from the predations of these corporate monsters that think they can run the world, think they've inherited the world. They can impose their agenda, through public-private partnerships, whether it's Davos or, ESG governance. And they don't call it governance, they call it governance. And so basically it's Larry Fink's view or vision that matters at BlackRock. Who is he? Who elected him? For the last time I checked, he has one vote. And I have one vote. That's what should matter, right?
Well, I think your vote counts as one. And I think that Larry Fink's vote counts as one. Times about what? How many trillions?
Yeah.
Times how many trillions? So what you've done is you put your finger right on the problem. Who runs a society? Who is ultimately in control of the society?
Because Larry Fink has more toys. His opinion is more important than mine. Why is that?
Well, because he's got a lot more assets he can play with.
Okay. But does that make him right?
No, that just gives him power.
Okay.
That gives him great power. And he can determine what is right and wrong, what is moral and what is not moral. And see, this is why Intermorifica came in. And Intermorifica came in and said here in section 12, says, finally, the civil authorities, which rightly regard the well-being of the citizens as their concern, are also bound to ensure equitably and vigilantly that public morality and social progress are not gravely endangered through the misuse of these media. This they can achieve by promulgating laws and tirelessly enforcing them. The liberty of individuals and groups is not in the least compromised by such vigilance, especially where serious guarantees cannot be given by those who use these media professionally. Well, I don't think we get any serious guarantees from Hollywood. So what Intermorifica is saying is what you're saying, is that the civil authorities, okay, they've got the responsibility for the welfare of the society. But the Larry Finks of the world and the Bill Gates of the world don't want that. The power of private, we've seen that time and again in America. That's the ultimate stress, the ultimate tension. Ray Dalio talked last month, and he talked about China. He said, I don't know, that Chinese leadership, it just kind of, seems like it's kind of closed to the West. And, well, what he's saying is he can't control them as well as he can over here. And you have a political system. See, this is the genius of this system. And the plutocrats are destroying it, and it's at their peril. Okay, because what they've got is an electoral system where money buys votes. Okay, it buys candidates, right? Okay, that's what it does. And then you've got the First Amendment. Well, everybody's jibber-jabbering. Yeah, you had alternative narratives questioning the mainstream narrative on COVID and other things. You're absolutely right, Tim. But also you got a cacophony of voices out there, okay? And everybody's jibber-jabbering away. And how can you tell who is who? That's where the church needs to step up with the state and say, these are the credible people. Now, I will say this about the church, because the church doesn't say anybody's credible unless it has Catholic on it. I think that's how they unendorse a lot of voices. So I think if you're a Catholic, you know, if you read the catechism, if you read something with a nihil obstat imprimatur, or if you read about the lives of the saints, you're reading good stuff. The rest of it, who knows? Unless you buy my book, of course.
But in your book on John Courtney Murray, his job was to convince Catholics that the American system was superior, meaning the idea of freedom of religion and separation of church and state. And of course, under the rules at the time, under the sort of the dispensation or the culture of the time, it seemed to work because there was a broad Christianity and a broad morality that that maintained a public order, a public morality, which made the system functional. But there was no defense against its erosion. And we saw that in the second half of the 20th century through the means of the First Amendment, whether call that Hollywood or the media, those very few individuals from a very small ethnic group, get control of the media. And without any restrictions, without any like muscular Catholic response, largely weakened through demographic changes, suburbia, the destruction of the urban Catholic neighborhoods, the church kind of being completely blind to the psychological warfare that the American Catholics and the American public in general is being subjected to, lost its political power because of demographics. And it no longer could it maintain, threats of boycott, things like that, things that had real effect. It's kind of thing, kind of like we see how the ADL functions, where it doesn't have any official power, but it, through its organization, it can threaten boycott because it has a Rolodex full of people who control the media, control the finance, and they can work behind the scenes to bring incredible pressure on people to see that their interests are advanced, or at least their perceived interests are advanced. Catholics in the early part of the 20th century enjoyed, I wouldn't say similar, but they could. Through the institutional church, and because the church represented so many people in these ethnic parishes, the church could exert incredible cultural power, moral authority, and it lost that in the second half of the 20th century through very consumerism and suburbia and these things. People have written about this, that this was a plan, and you wrote about psychological strategy planning, the PSB 33, was it?
Yeah, PSB D33.
D33, yeah.
Was the Doctrinal Warfare Program, and Appendix A, B, and C, along with the base document you can find on the American Proposition. That was largely written by a rich Catholic professor by the name of Dr. Edward B. Lilly. Mm-hmm. And I think, I want to back up a little bit here, because you did not have the technology in America 100 years ago like you got now. Okay, you just didn't have it. And so you had a consensus, right? But it was also a low-tech environment, mm-hmm. Okay? It was a pretty low, so everybody was face-to-face. I believe that the Catholic leadership in this country never came up with an effective plan to Catholicize the fatherland. I think that what you had was you had the ethnic neighborhoods, which in many ways were failed experiments. They were basically just simply sitting on the beaches of Normandy, getting pounded, and they weren't moving in. They weren't converting anyone. And I think Archbishop Ireland was correct in that assessment. I may have said that before on your program. He said, you're not going to convert the Americans with Polish Catholics. It's not going to work. You know, you need to approach the Americans where they are. And that's right. That's correct. And then what you had, Cardinal Gibbons. Cardinal Gibbons with the Catholic University of America. And he says, okay, well, let's get the best and brightest out of those ghettos, and you can go work with, the elites, in America. And that's what happened.
So that's basically giving Catholics a place at the table as opposed to converting. It kind of like they could be part of the American, they could enjoy establishment power, some recognition, and of course, wealth.
And the desire of America, the desire of Catholics is the same as the other Americans, to advance your career and make money. Okay? I mean, that is all throughout the Catholic environment now. I mean, everybody measures their success that way. For the most part, everybody, that's hyperbole, I agree. But most people, that's how they measure their success. There was never really a plan that was put in place to execute. Now, here I'm going to have some disagreements with your viewers or listeners again here. But I think there were some good parts of those Vatican II documents, like Gaudium et Spes, and a couple of other documents, one on missionary activity, which kind of give you a broad background on how to Catholicize the society. But it requires a leadership coordinating that and a unity among the Catholics. And if the leadership thinks, well, you know, the Catholic ideal, we just can't do it, or, you know, it's just not the ideal, we want the First Amendment, well, then you're beaten before you start. And what has always happened, if you look, and I agree, America presents a very different type of conversion situation as others, and I'm studying those other ones, but it still is something that can be dealt with from Catholic experience, which means that you have a dedication by the leadership to convert. You got this huge independent media of Catholics, yourself included, who can get on the same page and say the same thing over and over to the people, okay? And at the same time, you need leadership, lay leadership and episcopal leadership that says, we want to make things better for the American people. And now is a real opportunity, because a lot of people are not happy with the direction of America. 76% are not happy with the direction of America. And now somebody can look at the preamble of the Constitution and say, hey, look, it talks about unity and security and tranquility and prosperity for all of us. And we got the plan here. Let's go with this. But you need somebody who believes in it, who believes in that there's a heaven and that there's a hell, and that what we're doing is important. And it's not just a way to open up another market to somebody, because you have to be converted if you're going to be saved. You know, the Catholic Church is there, and you don't come into the church, you know it's the true church, and you don't come into the church, you go to hell. It's that simple. That's rock solid Catholic doctrine, never been changed.
Yeah, but we're dealing with America's maybe a culmination of 500 years of apostasy and heresy from the, you know, Protestant Reformation, where this notion of the common good was shattered,
right?
And just justify, you know, more or less looting operation that was the English Reformation. And so you had what's that R.H. Taney quote? An upstart aristocracy had its fangs in a carcass, then weren't going to be whipped off with a sermon.
that's right. I mean,
you know, and that's what we have now. It's just people aren't going to listen. Now, I think, again, at the end of the day, you got to remember God's in charge. And, you know, it's these things happen for a reason. And what you're seeing now is sort of the collapse of the liberal order, and perhaps even a sort of a civilizational transition, if not collapse. You know, this has happened throughout history, and you know, the dialectic that this creates, a new civilization is created. And a good example is Christendom wouldn't have come about if not for the collapse of the Roman Empire, and it's, you know, and of course its conversion was part of that ultimately beneficial collapse. You know, it's difficult for the people living through it to see it.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt.
There are trials and tribulations, and there's martyrdom, and you know, that's something that was never, right. Christ never said you wouldn't suffer. In fact, they said you would suffer. That's the whole message of Christianity, is suffering for the truth. So it's hard. Well, people lose that perspective, I suppose, these things.
Well, I think people do lose that perspective. Yeah. But, you know, also, too, once again, we have the history of the church, and then we have some of the Vatican II documents that say, you know, the bishops have got to provide for the goods, for the needs of all the people in their flock. Well, that's a pretty strong mandate. And so you've got to provide their material goods as well as their spiritual goods as much as you can. You can build these Catholic communities, I submit. But also, too, if you're going to convert, excuse me, you got to convert at the top. You got to convert people. You got to convert Larry Fink. That's going to be pretty hard.
Yes.
But, and that may take a while. But the alternative is there, people are going to say, to hell with the First Amendment. We don't want to peaceably assemble. We're going to come after you guys and pull you out of your businesses. Because that's the alternative. See, the First Amendment was designed to keep them safe in their businesses. But if people say this system isn't working, then they're going to come after the people who are at the top of it. Now, this system's got a lot of flexibility, and it offers a lot of things to a lot of people, and it can control people a lot too. But the Catholic Church leadership has got to throw off this idea that this is the ideal of organization, and it has to say, you know, we have the ideal of organization, and they need to come up and develop plans. Maybe they are developing plans, and we just don't know them. You know, we're not, it's above our pay grade. But if that's something that they need to do, and this is a real moment, I think, of opportunity. Of course, one question is always, and I've been asked to say this tonight, is like, what happens if, what happens if it is a Catholic confessional state? What about everybody else? Well, once again, I mean, Dignitatis Humanae, Inter Mirifica, they tell us how things are supposed to work. If pluralistic people can exist, different groups, different societies, you know, different religions can exist. You know, we're not going to punish them for being different, but the laws have got to be based on the Catholic faith. That's the ultimate goal. That's what you had in Christendom as an example. And you had all the different peoples there living, understanding that the laws were Catholic laws and they had to obey them, though maybe in private they did their own thing. But that is, you know, the flexibility that you have with Dignitatis Humanae. The common good is the actual determiner of what is allowed and what isn't. And common good is the sum total of those conditions, which make one's fulfillment of vocation or beatitude more efficacious. You got to have a goal, and you got to recognize the situation, and you got to work with fellow travelers. And there are a lot of Protestants, a lot of Christians of various denominations that agree with us on basic moral issues. This is what the Christian nationalism is about.
Yeah.
Contacted by somebody who worked with Torba, and they said, what are your thoughts? And I said, well, I said, I, you know, ultimately we have to have the Catholic confessional state, and ultimately, you know, the establishment clause has got to go. I mean, that's the long term. I said, we all agree about these basic sexual things, okay? We all agree that stuff has to be banned. That stuff has to be outlawed, okay? And we can, you know, we can do that with state laws, but, and we can probably base that on Dobbs and Kennedy, the decisions that came down this past summer that said, you look at the American history and tradition. Okay, American history and tradition didn't allow gay marriage. They didn't allow gender change. You know, they didn't allow any of this stuff, or CRT. They didn't allow any of that stuff. So we might be able to bootstrap that and say, this is how we're going to defeat the challenges from the substantive due process clause, which Justice Clarence Thomas really gave a gut shot to, and against the equal protection clause, and whatever doctrines, you know, the crazies may come up with, to take away power from the people to legislate. So that is something that we have, we can work with. However, we have to keep in mind, once again, while we're doing this, there's this idea called federalism. And, you know, here at the local level, going back to the elections, we had a red wave. St. Joe County is Republican for the first time ever. I live in St. Joe County. It's the first time ever it's been Republican in 170 years.
I didn't know that. It flipped.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, so I mean,
that's like Miami-Dade flipping in Florida.
That's exactly right. I mean, South Bend is blue, but I mean, the county is now red. The county governance, totally red. I mean, it's really something. So these victories can be made, but we have to understand that classical liberalism isn't going to get us to where we need to go.
No, it got us where we are.
It got us where we are, right. So we need to move on. The leadership, the elites, the plutocrats, I call them plutocrats because they use the laws to make money. So they're plutocrats. They're all types of people. These guys want to go into a totalitarian system. That's where they're going. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Sam Francis wrote about this. It's anarcho-tyranny. You know, he wrote about this 25, 30 years ago. It was really a good article. But he really described what was going on. And so we have got to bring order to this. And we have to have unity. and we have to be ready to suffer martyrdom. We have to take care of the martyrs and their families. And so this is what we have to do, and what we've always been called to do. It's tougher now than ever before. But I think it's doable. We win. Well, we're on the right side.
We're not the only ones claiming that we're morally right. The other side is claiming they're morally right, too, and they're pushing transgenderism.
And but they don't have Christ. Stuff. We have Christ.
No, they don't. Well, they're wrong. But my point is they think they are right. Right. Good example is Jamie Raskin, the congressman from Maryland, recently commented on Russia. Guy. Why Russia is the enemy is because they don't have gay rights in Russia. They right. don't have transgenderism and feminism too much, at least not enough that he finds pleasing. And so this is why Russia is the enemy, because they're basically you have a Jewish congressman saying Russia's the enemy because they're culturally Christian. Or you have this the spectacle of Merrick Garland's FBI acting like Czechists going after these Christian pro-lifers, Catholic pro-lifers, you know, and of course, Merrick Garland, you know, his real name is Garfinkel, from what I understand. And the same thing with Alejandro Mayorkas under, you know, controlling the Department of Homeland Security, who has completely, you know, ignored his constitutional responsibilities because he has an agenda to flood the country with more immigrants to diversify it. So, I mean, I think we have to look at these some sort of ethno-religious ethnic terms because that's the agenda. But they're the ones that talk about this stuff. A good example, you have Dana Nessel in Michigan openly talking about putting drag queens in every school because it's great. And she's the chief law enforcement officer of the state of Michigan. They're reelected. But you're talking about sort of the politics is sort of this is where the culture war has done so much damage. Is so many people are damaged by this, you know, by sin and their behavior. They can't think clearly about these things, and you know they cope with their guilt through by joining mass movements. A lot of crazy women out there who think, you know, the theoretical right to kill their unborn child up to even to after birth is more important than their ability to provide for their family, go to the store without getting mugged or raped or something. So you're a populist, which is completely is so morally confused because the liberal order and the First Amendment and the media, these things have been pushing these messages for the better part of 50, you know, 60 years in this country. You know?
Well, but you've also had the plutocratic elites, various different ethnicities. I mean, yeah, Jews, WASPs, and, you know, even Catholics. I mean, look, Dr. Edward Lilly was a Catholic, mm-hmm. and he targeted his own church. So you had these elites.
The Ford Foundation was full of white guys.
Well, right. It's white. Yeah, it's, yeah. Well, WASP. I mean, yeah, they're white guys. They're Americans,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They waged war against their own people. Absolutely. And this is what a lot of people notice is that the leadership of the white guys, the leadership of the Americans, betrayed their own people. That's what you have going on. You have betrayal of your own people by the leadership. That's what you have, political war in this last election. But the Catholic Church has always gone out and preached the gospel. Said Jesus Christ is the Son of God. This is his faith. You are bound to follow it. And this is what Americanism does. It says, oh, no, peel that back. Just talk about things that are pleasing to people. And no, you gotta talk about heaven or hell, you know, convert or go to hell. I mean, that's really what you're dealing with. And so you have to target the Jews. You have to target the plutocrats. You have to target, you know, the rich Catholics and say, look, you know, I mean, how much more powerful would Donald Trump and Elon Musk be if they were Catholics and they could say, hey, you know, Catholic Church, we have a Catholic vision we want to implement. How much more powerful do you think those? They're being picked off one by one. Mm-hmm. Okay. They would have real unity in the church if they could do that. Okay. Evelyn Rothschild just died. Okay. He died November 8th. He was 91 years old. Evelyn Rothschild, he just died. New York Times did it. You probably knew that. They estimated his wealth at $2 to $40 billion dollars. I had to think for a minute there. Sorry. $2 to $40 billion. That's what's in the New York Times obituary. You know the significance of that number? They don't know how much he had.
Yeah, no.
That was a really powerful guy. And then they put in about all the things he supported, which was privatization of, you know, which is the stuff that the plutocratic class likes. Okay. And so what you do is I think there's a lot of ground to look at where we can fight on, a lot of good ground. And it kind of, you have the cultural issue of the American people being destroyed by their own. You got the moral issues. You got so many areas you can fight. It kind of reminds Marine Corps general during the Korean War. You know, he was surrounded by the North Koreans, and his aide came up to him, sir, we're surrounded, we're cut off. And the general said, oh, those poor bastards. He said, what do you mean? We can shoot any direction, we'll hit one of them. We've got so many targets of opportunity as Catholics. We need to talk with one voice. We need to stay together. We need to stop fighting each other. And, hell, we've
all done
that.
How many Catholics in Pennsylvania, voted for Shapiro over Mastroianni? Mastroianni, rather.
I don't know. Yeah, it was Shapiro won big.
Yeah, if they had Catholic, obviously you have a lot of deracinated and alienated Catholics voting there. Assuming the elections are honest, right? I can't. Especially
say
Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia. Yeah.
But the Republican Party really wanted Shapiro to win, the establishment, because they didn't like
That's right.
Because he was this insurgent populist Republican. That's another right. problem is you have the uni-government thing, where they're all working for the same plutocrats of which you speak, and it's either way they win. It's terrible.
But the MAGA Republicans, I submit the MAGA Republicans are a nationalist movement. These are white Christians. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I mean, these are people of European descent, of Christian, of some corrupt form of Christianity or Catholic. These are the MAGA Republicans. That's who they are. That's an ethnic identity right there. So who's excluded from that? Well, blacks and Jews, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's an opportunity. Maybe if the Catholic Church would welcome white people, Americans, and say, hey, let's stop all this talk about racism. Because when we talk about racism, we know who that's directed at.
Yes.
So let's stop that crap. And let's just start talking about perfecting this American people, like in the Vatican II documents, where it says we're going to purge the evil and have the truth. Belden ran against Hochul in New York. Belden was a pretty strong Zionist Jew, and he was supported by Trump, but he lost.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I saw that. It was 2020 when you had all that, in the wake of George Floyd's death and the rioting and all that insanity. Which is all was part of regime change operation. When the Pope came out and said that racism is just as sinful as abortion, and I go, well, I know what abortion is. I don't know what racism is. So
right, exactly.
And there is a Pope more or less following his CIA programming by saying that.
Yeah. I think that's an Americanist thing. That's a plutocratic. Yeah. He's saying that, okay, racist. Well, okay, so we're racist. Okay, well, what does that mean? We exist? Is that what that means? I mean, and then the other day he said, well, populism, reportedly, I don't know if it's true, but reportedly he said populism is toxic. Well, what are you talking about? You're talking about national identities. The church has always recognized that cultures and peoples have a right to exist. I just read Pius the 12th Chiracy again from 1953. But, people have a right to defend their cultures and their peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is ethnicity, and part of ethnicity is DNA, and part of that is race.
And but cultures and peoples are an impediment to globalism and
that's correct. Big business. They are. That's correct. They are. That's right. And a friend of mine is a priest. He told me about Emmanuel Wallerstein. And Emmanuel Wallerstein wrote a book on world systems. I got it right here. I just finished reading it. World systems analysis. And he says the global, and he's absolutely right, and this is dovetails to Fanfani. The global system is such for capitalism. It's based on capitalism. That's why the war ultimately against China and against Russia, okay? Because they got to make them more capitalist, okay? So that's the war, and anybody who's nationalist is an obstacle to the plutocratic designs and to this giant empire. So you got to break down these peoples that are not made by the plutocrats. Now, that having been said, the plutocrats can use nationality like they do in Ukraine They can use religion like they do in Ukraine to get people behind their functions, their purposes, their goals, their war. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why you had the Archbishop from Ukraine come here to Notre Dame and everybody fell down worshiping him and everybody's behind Ukraine. See, they use religion, you know, the Catholics against the Orthodox, you know, they use the Polish and the Ukrainians against the Russians, you know.
Well, that's right out of PSBD 33, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
The manipulation
it is.
Of religion. That's of the Cold War. And
yeah, that's PSBD 33, and that's just you divide your enemies by whatever. These people will do anything. I mean, they will use anything. Everything is a weapon.
And they talk about openly using the media as it existed to the day.
Right.
What that means is the First Amendment is a weapon against you.
Of course it is.
It's a public-private partnership.
Yes. Yes. The First Amendment is a weapon. The First Amendment was always a weapon against us. See, what they did is they checked the power of the government, they checked the power of the church, and they checked the power of the mob. See, you can assemble peaceably. Oh, we want you to have this right to assemble peaceably. Because if you don't, we don't give you that right, you're going to pull us out of our businesses and hang us. You're going to give us a Mussolini.
Unless they call your peaceful assembly an insurrection.
Well,
and you use the First Amendment, i.e. the media, you create a false narrative, right?
Right, and it's a false flag, too, with you know the 11 FBI agents supposedly there, right?
Yeah.
So exactly. they use race. We're of European extraction, and we're living in America. I'm an American. Yeah, I'm a white guy, but I'm an American. Okay? So guess what? Oh, Dave, you're a racist.
And then they used the Polish border for a pretext for another world war. I'm like, no, thank you. That missile landed on Polish territory. It turns out the Ukrainians fired it. But it was reported NATO had a meeting to convene under Article 5, which is, what, World War III? What are you, nuts? You know, great. And someone sent me a text message about it. I said another issue regarding a Polish border for another a pretext for another war, world war. No, thank you. I'm not going to take the bait. But yeah, there's a joke I heard is about a Polish farmer who's working his field and he finds a shiny bottle. It's a genie bottle, and he cleans it off, rubs it. Out comes a genie, grants him three wishes, and this Polish looks at him, let me think about this. And so they says, yes, what's your first wish? I says, I want China to invade Poland. He goes, what? I want China to invade Poland. It's okay. Wish granted. All of a sudden, here's the rumblings from over the horizon. All of a sudden, Chinese army comes in and smashes Poland, and he hides. His house is wrecked. He crawls out from under the rubble, and the genie says, "Your second wish." He goes, "I want China to invade Poland." So, again? Okay. Then the same thing happens again. Your third wish. He goes, "I want China to invade Poland." Says, I thought, do you love your homeland, Poland? Yes, I love Poland. And he goes, then why are you doing this? He says, why are you doing this? Because to invade Poland, China has to go through Russia. And so, lead up to Ukraine, you had sort of this block of Hungary and Poland and Russia are sort of the anti-woke stuff. But then all of a sudden, they pick this war, NATO picks this fight with Russia. Because of Poland's ancestral hatred of Russians, become this advocate for NATO, a war against Russia over Ukraine.
That's right. They use Catholic Poland to advance the LGBTQ plutocratic agenda against Russia. That's right. That's what they do.
And then,
and everybody goes along with it.
Yeah, and then first we heard last fall. That CBS had a report that as much as 75% of the aid going to Ukraine could not be accounted for. Oh, we hear this recent crash of this cryptocurrency operation, FTX, with this, Wonder Kid, Sam Bankman-Fried or something. Right. It crashes, FTX is just gone, money's gone. Right. And it turns out that FTX, Ukraine was investing some of the aid money in FTX, and FTX was turning around and handing over tens of millions of dollars to Democratic campaigns for this the midterm.
I think the Republicans are going to investigate that. I just saw a story about that. But I think that's a good thing now that we're doing that in the House. But I think, we have to realize as Catholics, the Catholic leadership, first of all, has got to throw off its American captivity. It's got to throw out this idea that Americanism is good, that the liberal order is good. It has to work towards the confessional state. That means it has to work for the mass conversion of people. It can target the plutocrats. It can target the Jews. It can target anybody in leadership position or government position. And then, of course, the mass of people, too. They have to take care of their own people. They have to stop dancing to the tune of the plutocrats. You know, whatever that is, if it's LGBTQ, that's a weapon, for God's sake. Racism allegations are weapons. You don't repeat that. You look at the American people and say, these are the American people. These are the things we're going to improve. This is the Black people. These are things we're going to improve. And by the way, we have a structure that we can have and build. Look, people want Christian nationalism because it offers Christ as the basis of the laws. And everybody knows Christ through the Bible and what he said, okay? And where this is coming down to is in the sexual issues, like you and I have talked about, mm-hmm. These sexual issues, it's the flashpoint, okay? Well, people want Christ and his law as the basis of the laws in America because it protects everyone. And the plutocrats and the Jews ought to recognize that. And they ought to be thankful for that because it will protect everyone, like Pius, like Leo XIII said in his 1891 encyclical, where he talks about labor and capital. And so he says, look, you all have to work together. And the way you work together is with a system based on the divine positive law or the law of Christ. That's why these books of Christian nationalism are number one bestsellers on Amazon. Because people want hope, and they know they're not getting the hope from this system. They don't believe the leadership anymore. The political systems are being destroyed. Their institutional memory is being destroyed. They're being isolated into anomic individuals, which is what Joe Biden said. And they want something that brings them together and protects them. Because not everybody is a venture capitalist. Not everybody is the smartest inventor on the block. Not everybody is well connected. Most of us just want to live lives and live peacefully. And the Catholic Church, with allies, can build that, at least in some form now. And we have to go towards the confessional state because that's a benefit for everybody. Now, what that does is that provides order, proper order within domestic societies. As one of my articles talks about, the popes have always said the international order requires proper order in domestic societies, because once there's a disorder in these domestic societies, okay, then that spreads to the international order, and then you have wars and rumors of wars and all that kind of stuff. So you've got to have order in your domestic societies. And right now in the liberal order, individuals, non-state actors, have way too much power, and the UN is not equipped to deal with that. The UN charter can't deal with that. I mean, there are some aspects of it that, there are some treaties that are in place, but the charter deals with states, and the states have got to get control of their people, which goes back to what you said, which is who's in control here? Is it the civil authorities or is it Larry Fink? No, it's the civil authorities. We're in control. We got the final power. Because we're looking out for everybody's welfare. And that is something that the American founders hated. Because they were the commercial interests of the day, and they were creating a new economy and a new way of life that would give a certain group of people, the survival of the fittest, the best adapted to society, a chance to really advance. So the Catholic Church is, and I think you see, really the big, theological and philosophical arguments. And just from talking to you, I can tell you do. I mean, this is the fight of our life right now. This is the battle of our day.
Yeah, and the political language that we're given doesn't speak to it. We're not allowed to speak to it, because if you criticize ravenous venture capitalists, someone calls you a communist.
Right.
You're a socialist. What are you, a communist?
Right.
I had a discussion a few weeks ago. I was at a family gathering, and we were talking about some of these issues. And I said, we have a situation now where Jeff Bezos is building yachts that are too big to fit under bridges in European rivers. And the solution is him to buy the bridge and raise the bridge.
Right.
And I said, that's ridiculous. And then I remember, it's okay for some of these wealthy men who've earned money honestly to spend their money. I said, no, that's ridiculous. Am I a communist for saying that's ridiculous?
Yeah.
First of all,
No.
then I started pointing out all the benefits and economic, the rent sinking and the subsidies that these huge corporations get
Right.
anyway. And
Right.
so the moment you make a little money, then all of a sudden you change the rules to benefit you, you know, whether it's tax subsidies or huge government contracts and these things. So there's no fairness here. And then they end up buying up, you know, the media, like they're buying up newspapers. You talk about the freedom of the press. And here's the one thing is, give an example of the problem we have today. Freedom of the press is there, theoretically there, so people can provide information to the public, for the public to vote and choose their leaders. That's kind of in a simplification of why we have freedom of the press, at least the official version. But here's an example here. Here we go. This isn't defense of Donald Trump, but I'm saying if the press is supposed to function the way it's supposed to function, it was NPR, and this is the article they wrote or something, a program they had on reporting on Donald Trump's announcement of his decision to run for president in 2024. And this is what they write. The head term is, with midterm losses, Trump's climb to the nomination could be a steeper than he'd like. And the article opens up, Donald Trump, who tried to overthrow the results of the 2020 presidential election, and inspired a deadly riot at the Capitol in a desperate attempt to keep himself in power, announced he's running again for president in 2024. That's the opening article to opening paragraph to a news article. This is not an editorial. Yeah. Now, first of all, he didn't try to overthrow an election. He claimed there's fraud. So you may think he was wrong, but he was claiming there was fraud. He may think there was fraud. And really, the election was overthrown with the fraud, not with his claims. Deadly riot. Well, first of all, it wasn't a riot. That's problematic in and of itself. Deadly. Well, one person was killed, from what I understand. That was one of the protests, was killed by a Capitol Hill police officer, recklessly firing his weapon. So that's a good example. Then we have, you know, the Washington Post, and this is our press, our free press. Donald Trump, this is the headline, Trump, who as president fomented an insurrection, says he's running again. That's the headline. Again, what insurrection? And I know they call it that, but these words should mean something. They're editorializing. And I see this all the time now, much more so than I used to, by the way. Right. They used to be better at it. Yeah, here's the first paragraph. Trump.
We've woken up to it, too. Sorry, go ahead.
Donald Trump, the twice impeached former president who refused to concede defeat and inspired a failed attempt to overturn the 2020 election, culminating in a deadly attack in the U.S. Capitol, officially declared on Tuesday night that he's running to retake the White House. First of all, it's poorly written. You're reading it, you're like, just tell me that he decided to run again. You know, what is this? And it's poorly written. It's unprofessional. It's ridiculous. How do you look at these organs of the press as provide anything that's, you think, any objective news or something? It's really bad.
It's not objective news. I mean, Intermorifica would shut him down, because the government would say, you know what, you're giving false information, and that's bad for people. And see, the American deep state and the globalists were opposed to Intermorifica in 1963. They screamed like hell because of First Amendment. And nobody really wants free speech or free press. Nobody really wants that. They want to be able to say what they want to say. And free speech and free press may have given the American people, and especially the American elites, okay, a competitive advantage in the world. But that doesn't mean that it's good for a people to maintain that.
Well, what happened was you had the development of the media in the early 20th century, first with the press, yellow journalism, like William Randolph Hearst and Pulitzer and these people. Right. And I think it was in 1917, a congressman gave a speech saying that the major newspapers have been purchased by the Wall Street interest, J.P. Morgan, and they're under their control. And most of the newspapers in the country got their feed from these few newspapers. They installed the editors, and so it was always controlled corporately, but by these interests. So what you're getting as news always reflected the interest of those in power. You weren't getting, Now you had a lot of decentralization, papers owned by local families, represented local interests. So there's a lot of diversification, but particularly since the the end of the 20th century, you've had this huge concentration. But then that was broken up with the internet, right? Which they had to clamp down on. So they stopped giving lip service to freedom of speech, or they privatized their censorship. Well, it's a private company. You can't do anything about it, right?
That's exactly right. They privatized the censorship. That's what they did. But still, people were able to communicate. And, and still you have this issue, the cacophony of voices. And you really need leadership. We need to get back to the idea of converting people, of thinking of us and we, instead of just me or I. And that is something that the church leadership can provide once it throws off, I think, this heresy. But, you know, you're right. That Citizen Kane was about that concentration of wealth and power. And I think about that time, early 1920s, is when Hilaire Belloc wrote his book, The Free Press, which I thought was a great book, mm-hmm. Because he kind of describes, you know, the dynamic with the press, and it really opened my eyes.
Walter Lippmann, Public Opinion. He says public opinion doesn't exist; it's manufactured by those who control the press.
Right.
He says it has to be managed and manipulated. And same with, with his cohort there. What's his name? Edward Bernays.
Edward Bernays. Yeah.
And using these, and of course, mass communication was there for mass mind manipulation. That's why it was studied.
Wait a minute! I thought we were talking about making the will of the people known.
And then the moment someone starts using mass communication, like a Father Coughlin or something, they're shut off.
Yeah, wrong type of free speech.
We don't want that free speech.
Yeah, we don't want that free speech. We want this other free speech.
Only the Nazis burn books. They burn more books in post-war Germany than ever the Nazis ever did.
That's
of course. Then, what kind of books did they burn? But yeah, we talk about the confessional state and divine positive law of Christ, the kingship of Christ. What you're saying is you have an overarching morality that governs everybody, that keeps the oligarchs in check. Right. They're just as subject, despite how much money they have, they're just as subject to the moral law as I am and you are.
That's right. And the government then looks out for all of us. And so then there's an identity with that government. And that's, they don't like that. They don't want that. And a government, Dignitas Humanae and Inter Mirifica really laid out how a society could work. A pluralistic society could actually work. But, it's got to be based on truth and on the Catholic faith. And people are not going to lose their religion or lose their jobs or get forced to convert or, be penalized if they're of a different religion. But we're going to have our laws based on this basic morality. And we have an area of agreement right now with about all the various Christian sects I can think of right now with these sexual issues. And so we can start to, we should be able to build on that and go from there.
Well, at the very least, don't tell me that the liberal order is neutral on these things.
It's not.
I mean, come on.
No, neutrality is hostility.
That's a lie. I mean, yeah,
it is a lie. And so that's why I say the Republican Party needs to stop spouting classical liberalism. I mean, they need to realize, we're for the American people, and we need to advance that, which is, our ethnic identity, the Christian faith, and that's good for everybody. I mean, they need to just realize that.
We're looking at sort of the twilight of the American empire, the collapse of the system, its legitimacy, and how this may work out is you have the sort of this disintegration of the American empire, and as it breaks into its constituent parts, meaning a sort of a decentralization, which you do see occurring in many respects, the recognition that through local government, through our governors, we might find some defense against this new world order, these globalists. And we see certain states reacting in a way you want to see them react, legislatures and governors responding, is as that system collapses, the American system collapses. Again, don't, like anything, like a lot of Christians and Catholics, is that when you talk about America, well, that's idolatry. Stop that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a political system, and it's gone now, but it's been disintegrated. So that America that you knew is now gone. Let's face up to that reality. But what can we get from that? Can we turn that around? Well, thing is,
I think that's right.
So you have this collapse of this idol America, you can have an opportunity to for this idea of sort of a Christian order to take over, which is kind of roughly parallels, it echoes what happened when the Roman order collapsed, you know. So that's how these things happen. And it's hard for us, you know, we live, if we're lucky, 75, 80 years to perhaps see this, being a part of it or even seeing it, because it's sort of a, it's the end of an epoch maybe. And so it's hard to interpret it.
No, I think that's right. This idea, the Donar's Oak, this ideology that we have to cut down is this liberal order ideology. That has to go. That has to go. And we can do that through many different ways with many other groups. But it needs to be cut down. And the Catholics just have to cut it down. The leadership, lay and Episcopal, have to cut that down. They have to say, this is not the ideal. This has brought us to where we are. You're all suffering because of that. You're absolutely right. That's what has to happen. That is the Donar's Oak. And, you know, people are going to be martyred for that.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, again, and it'll require a crisis and disruption, unfortunately.
Be nice if you could, seeing it now.
We're seeing it now. It'd be nice if you could say, hey, listen, if you don't do this, this happens, and let's, you know, let's avoid a tragedy. But unfortunately, history suggests you always need some sort of, you need tragedies and disruptions to work these things out. I don't relish it. I just acknowledge it, you know. And in the meantime, just speak the truth.
You know. Well, anytime you go, you know, you have a change, it's a big deal. You know, but this is a pretty resilient system. Mm-hmm. And it is able to accommodate even people like you and me talking right now and people who want to change it. And it is this liberal ideology, which is being pumped into Iran, which is being pumped into China, and it has been pumped in. It's still in Russia. I mean, this is still there. This is, in many ways, this is a very powerful, seductive ideology that leads a lot of people to overthrow their legitimate authority, to act against their own collective self-interest, and instead just pursue individual interests and go into this anomic individualism.
I think the mistakes the oligarchs made is they seem to be pulling plug on the consumerism. If you do that, then what is there to bribe the people anymore? They thought they could pull the plug on consumerism. You know, there's all these fomented energy crises and economic crises they're doing created, you know, the false shortages and this stuff. And you pull the plug on the consumerism. What's there to bribe? You know, to put the people to sleep. That's a tough thing to pull off.
The metaverse. fake consumerism. They're buying and selling property on the metaverse.
Yeah.
Well, you don't sound convinced, Tim. All right, don't you have some property there? I mean, they're taking out that mortgage now.
Well, you know, it's apparently we're supposed to be happy if we don't own anything, because we don't have any responsibilities.
Oh boy, hey, something to that. I guess we'll all be priests, right?
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. You know.
So, okay, well, David, I think, if anything, I think we kind of covered it. I mean, the article you wrote at the American Proposition is, could this be the last election, right? That was the last election, question mark? Is that
Yeah, it was the last election, And so the last election, small L, small E, followed by the last election, small L, capital E. Because remember, the Democrats and the plutocrats and the globalists were all saying, this could be the last election because the MAGA Republicans. Well, you know, they're trying to make it the last election. So we all quit and say, well, there's no point, or just go with them. Or, you know, we need to convert people. We need to cut down this liberal ideology. We need to understand, you know, that there's a life hereafter. We need to convert people. We need to organize society accordingly. And conversions have got to be at the top all the way down to the bottom. They got to focus on the top. And that way you get real change in society. And we got to get rid of this American captivity that the mind of the Catholic prelate seem to be in, that the liberal order is good. And a lot of Catholic laity have that idea too. So, yeah, I mean, I've got that. And then I got a couple of other articles that are up there on Dobbs and Kennedy and just the love of wealth. And that all seems to be tied together. There's everything in this society seems to be denominated into wealth or monetary value. And you have a great deal of ambitious people seeking after that and judging their success based on that. And wealth exerts a real influence on people. And we're talking about inordinate love of wealth.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, inordinate. And once again, the catechism says inordinate love of wealth. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, you have to accumulate money, you know, to live. I mean, we all know that. But it's the inordinate love of money that they're against. And so that we have to stand against. And that's really very dangerous. And so the government, you know, is there to protect all of us for the benefit of all of us. And the church is there for all of us, too.
Yeah. And again, it's the accumulation of great wealth, what it does to the psyche or the individual, right. It warps them, as you can see, the billionaires, and they become very warped and dark, you know, malevolent, misanthropic individuals.
I think they do. I think that's
well, was it Soros who said he actually thinks himself as godlike?
Yeah.
Has he looked in the mirror lately? I mean,
I don't say that video. Of his judgment.
I don't say that to be disparaging. I'm just saying is we all have to face our own mortality, right? I mean, but he actually wrote that with his power. And again, and he's not at the top of the pyramid. He's a Rothschild agent. I think he was set up by the Rothschilds in the 60s to do their bidding. But yeah, even Evan Rothschild, you know, evidently worth 2 to 40 billion, whatever, quadrillion, trillion, still
that's some real money.
He still died, though, right?
Yeah, he still died. That's a good 91. He cheated death for many years, but he ultimately still dies. Everybody gets called in front of their creator. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, the way is before us. I mean, we got the saints and the martyrs that have gone before us. And it's not going to be easy to make the conversion. It's not going to be easy to change things. But there's a lot of opportunity here. And you and I have talked about a lot of the different opportunities that are out there. And I mean, there's a lot of ways that we're Catholics and the Catholic leadership can get involved and make things happen for the good. And let's not buy their rhetoric and buy the crap from the media. I mean, if the media says something, the only thing we know for sure, and I think you'll agree with me on this, the only thing we know for sure is what they want us to think.
Yeah, they're telling us for a reason.
Telling us for a reason, right?
And you're usually more than half the time is just to believe the opposite, and you're correct.
Right. So the media told us there's going to be a red wave, right? Well, you know, I mean, the Republicans had to defend the most seats, and so they focus on what, 3 or 4 races, mm-hmm. and the Democrats won them, one's a runoff. So everybody said, oh, I guess we can't win, you know? So, you know, I mean, that's what they're doing. It's political warfare.
Yep. So, okay. Well, David, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, sir.
It's been a good talk, I think. The American Proposition. You can go to his website and you can find these articles. I'll provide the link, of course. And, of course, your book, John Courtney Murray and the American Proposition, is still for sale, right? And you have it, and that's now on in fact, I did get it. You can get it on Kindle now, too, right?
You get the e-version and you get a paperback version. It's two volumes. It's on Amazon.
Yeah, you broke it into 2 volumes. I like it because it's I have a hard copy in that because I can take notes, and the Kindle's very good at that. I know that medium is troublesome in many ways because there's nothing better than a real book, right? But I usually get both because I use it for notes and that sort of thing. So,
right. But you know, the thing I like about Kindle, and I've gotten quite a few books by Kindle, I mean, you can read them fast, and you can also highlight
them and get the notes emailed to you. And it's particularly good because that way you don't have to like use post-its or something.
right. Yeah, exactly. And so then you can save it, and then you go look at it. Oh yeah, right. You know. Yeah. So I kind of like that aspect of it. It is kind of, and it's immediate delivery because I mean, like, I'll be thinking of something. It's like, I want to read it now. So, you know, and it's a cheaper price. And they're smart. That's smart marketing, I guess. Mm-hmm. But with the introductions by John Rao, Dr. John Rao, and I think he's a very reputable scholar. And
good Catholic scholar. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about the social kingship of Christ. That's where we got to work. That's the way we're going. We're not going to get.
Well, the problem is to accept that you have to you have to shed the Protestant Reformation and all that, the black legend, a lot of these things. People think they know the history of this stuff. And not to mention, in fact, all the problems that the church has experienced itself or herself. Right. So there's that, because nothing's perfect on this planet. But you're right. It is the idea that Christ being the center of it, and that regulates everything, and that you have to know the doctrine in these things. And Chris, there's been so many centuries of apostasy and heresy in the West, right, that we're kind of seeing the culmination of that today now, unfortunately. So
we are, and I think what Christian nationalism represents is a cry of the people, the American people, to say we want right order.
Yeah,
we want right order.
Moral sanity.
We want sanity, right?
Anchored in something real, you know.
Anchored in something real, something that's bigger than us. I mean, this is an incredible moment.
And here's the thing, though. I'm not invoking a pie in the sky God thing. There is doctrine. There's logic to this. There's natural law. There's arguments. So if you give me the time, I can make the case for each of these principles and these laws. Other than saying, no, I want to do something. I want to, which is liberalism. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to hear anything about it, right? That's what liberalism is. Right. It can be anything I want to do, and I don't want to hear about any limitations or morality in these things. Right. Well, we see what type of world that creates. So
right. And we're seeing that there are connections between ourselves, with our children, our grandparents. We're seeing the connection, and we're seeing these connections being broken, and we're being impoverished as a result of it in many ways. That's right. What the Protestant Revolution, I don't even want to call it a Reformation, Revolution did. And it destroyed the international order and led to the Westphalian system, where you had independent sovereign states. And even then, the Catholics said there's a natural order here, okay, that you should organize your relations. I talk about that on my website too in an article. But you're absolutely right. So everything got broken apart with the Protestant Revolution, and then the Enlightenment just further drove out faith and Christ, and then you end up with this, and now this thing is turned on us. It's destroying us.
No, well, yeah,
we've got to say enough.
Man being the measure of things, and from that, that's a straight path to technocracy,
right?
And transhumanism.
And totalitarianism, right? Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay, David, thank you so much.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Tim.
Happy Thanksgiving. And of course, Merry Christmas. We're coming up on that season too. So.
Yes, it will. And remember, Sunday is the Feast of Christ the King. Everybody should read Pius XI, Quas Primus from 1925, especially paragraphs 15 through 18.
Excellent. Good night, then.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance. Maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, now do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him, 'cause I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes. master sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. No verdict was returned. Edmund Lennon read a book on Marx. A quartet practiced in the park, and we sang dirges in the dark. The day the music died, we're singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. Helter skelter in the summer swelter, the birds flew off with a fallout shelter. 8 miles high and falling fast. Jester on the sidelines in a cast. Now the halftime air was sweet perfume while the sergeants played a marching tune. We all got up to dance, oh, but we never got the chance. As the players tried to take the field, the marching band refused to yield. Do you recall what was revealed? The day the music died, we started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Oh, we shed it to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. Oh, and there we were all in one place, a generation lost in space, with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, 'cause fire is the devil's only friend. Why, and as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage. No angel born in hell could break that Satan spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight. The day the music died, he was singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news. She just smiled and turned away. And I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken, and the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, why, they caught the last bus for the coast the day the music died. And they were singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Broke my Chevy to the left.